Well, it's time for us now to turn to our next segment on the programme, and turning to Ballinrobe once more.
On Stáisiún is Fearr sa Bhean-Iarthar, Midwest Radio.
Well, earlier in the programme, we heard Marty Fahey there talking from Chicago, one of the leading musicians, multi-instrumentalist and artistic people in the city of Chicago. His father, Martin Fahey from Ballinrobe, had a programme for over 50 years with an Irish Hour in the city of Chicago that meant so much to the immigrants over there. Well, one of the young Lions, writer and broadcaster and great character and sports expert is Liam Horan from Ballinrobe. Liam has ventured into the world of creative writing, and he has for some time, but he has published his first book called A Second Chance. Met up with Liam recently, and great character and fascinating account of what's going on. He gave me this most brilliant synopsis and summary of what we can find within the covers of this lovely book of short stories. I think there are about 14 or 15 in it in total.
This is Second Chance and Other Stories. It's a collection of short stories I've written over the last couple of years, and sometimes when people say, when you write a collection of short stories or you pull together a collection of short stories, is there a theme that binds that collection? I didn't set out with a theme, but when it was all said and done, I looked back on it, there are some things that emerge as themes or as a motif, for example. So for example, both my parents passed away in the last year and a half, and death and loss and people who were once there no longer being there, and dealing with imminent death and getting on with life after death. And I don't mean that in the spiritual sense, but those who are left behind getting on with life after the loss of others does make its way into a lot of the stories. And if you asked me 2 years ago if I wrote a book of short stories, would I write a lot about death? I would say no. I'm not morbid by nature. I'm not obsessed by death. But it's there, but in a kind of a, I hope, optimistic way as well, in that a life well lived and, you know, people learning from how people go through their final days perhaps can be very powerful as well. So it's by and large set in the west of Ireland, though it's not, it needn't be in the west of Ireland. It just happens to be the stories, I hope, look at how people react to things, how people set about achieving things or set about dealing with setbacks, etc. That's it in a nutshell. And we launched it at the Wild Atlantic Words Literary Festival in Castlebar on October the 8th. And we had a great crowd, a partisan crowd turned up from Ballinrobe in particular. And we had a great night. It was like a reunion of about a 1982 club team or maybe 1987, 88 club team. It was great, great fun. It's a wonderful festival, as you know, and so the book is available now online and in bookshops around Mayo and further afield as well.
Liam Horan's glorious exposition and in general about the themes and stuff behind his lovely new book of short stories, which is entitled Second Chance. And in and out, we'll have some stitched music from three particular musicians from South Mayo, very much very close to where Liam is from. We'll have music from Chloe Feeney, who lives outside Hollymount. And we'll have music also from the great pianist and the great musician himself, Paul, as well. But Robert Jadashidi, she can couple on with Gadi Liam, but we'll take a little start now, this time from Chloe Feeney, with this beautiful piece of music.
So what I can do is scan through the titles of some of the stories. There are 15 stories there, so I'll take every second one. Perhaps that'll get to about seven. The title song in the album is Second Chance, which I suppose is the title song, so to speak, because it was the first story I completed in preparing this collection. But also, as somebody in my mid-50s, writing my first book of short stories, despite being involved in journalism and other literary pursuits, for the want of a better phrase, over the years, this is my first go at it. So maybe it's a second chance myself there. That looks at a man whose wife passed away and he's about to go back out into the world again, so to speak. Or maybe he's not, but he goes through a few hurdles, I think, to get him to the point where maybe he's about to look out in the world again. My short stories, like lots of short stories, don't purport to get to the end, because where is the end ultimately? Faraway Hills then is about a woman working in a local library, and an exotic American male arrives in the library, and away they go on a whirlwind love affair, a bit of a Fáilte Ireland, west of Ireland, Wild Atlantic Way kind of a tour. But there are other things for her. There's a previous relationship that finished badly and is maybe not gone yet, and the arrival of Mitch from Louisiana may well be a stimulus to make her look back at the other relationship as well. Going Back is about a young woman who is in a coercive relationship. She was a great sports star, and she's sort of nibbling around getting back into that reluctantly, has to be coaxed along, but that's where she's going and how she's dealing with all of that. Closure is about a common theme. It's about the number of pubs closing in towns, in a town in rural in the west of Ireland, and all of that. Making the Leap is what I actually read at the launch. I read a number of minutes of it at the launch. It's about a man having a swim in his local lake. On the morning, he may be about to get engaged to his intended, and he has a chance encounter with an older woman in the water. And she makes him, encourage him to look at it a little bit differently before making the leap, so to speak, or taking the leap. Then we have A Sense of Self. It's also about a female sports star who has what would be called in the modern argo anger management problems. We didn't have that growing up. We just had temper growing up, but it's anger management issues. And she's been ruled out of a big game, and she's climbing a mountain, and the big game is making its way to her via commentary, though she had intended it that it wouldn't. And dealing with her own introspection about why she plays a sport that can bring her to such places that she doesn't like in herself, and how she might deal with that. Talk of Regret is a man returning from New Jersey to attend his mother's funeral. Again, something that maybe crops up in my writing a bit is that chance encounter. In this case, it's the airport with a woman as well. She helps him maybe put some of what's... His relationship with his mother was not bad, but was a bit uncommunicative or non-communicative. Not an uncommon thing, I suspect, for many males. So she helps him look at that slightly differently as well. And the final one I reference is A Home Draw. This actually won the Maura Varley Short Story Competition, which is a newly inaugurated competition in conjunction with Banrobe Agricultural Show. And it's about a man working as a chauffeur in New York, and starts listening to the matches from home on the local club radio. So the local club has a radio system in Facebook and broadcasts the matches from home. The team are on the verge of big things, and the impact it has on him, and also on the wealthy, now retired American man who he drives every Sunday, and how he gets into this routine of these matches at home as well. So you know, they're the general introductions to them. And I suppose what I would say is it's the introspection, it's not the, you know, and they all lived happily ever after, or we got the winning goal in the last paragraph. That's not the approach. There are as many unresolved questions as there are resolved questions, because life doesn't resolve itself. Even if you win today, you may lose tomorrow in a sporting sense or whatever. So that's the overview of seven of the 15 stories in the book, John.
Thank you.
Growing up, journalism, particularly sports journalism, was all I ever wanted to do. As many people know, my late father, Billy, who passed away in February of this year, was a local stringer, correspondent, writer for 70 years for the Mayo News, and also contributed over the years to the now defunct Western Journal, Western People, Connacht Telegraph, Connacht Tribune, Midwest Radio. So my childhood was spent in Hollymount, in under the trees in Hollymount and the Saucer. That was genuinely the centre of the world when I was growing up, because that's where all the finals in South Mayo were played. The America Cup final, the South Junior final. The Gary Moore had the Good Fellowship competition. Sorry, Ballyhaun's the Good Fellowship. But Gary Moore had the Exiles Cup, and they played the finals in Gary Moore in Hollymount as well, which is a bit of a crossing of the line there in terms of the local rivalries. But my father went there Sunday after Sunday, back to Turmachidi for the Comortis the Gaeltreardon tournaments. Ballinrobe had a picture at the time, but that's where I spent my childhood. And from very early on, I was reporting on matches. In fact, at 11 years of age, Tommy Gorman, who was then editor of the Western Journal, a young editor, sent me a cheque for £5 for a report I had written. And my father said, my son wrote that, and actually refers to that in his recently published book, which was launched at the Wild Atlantic Festival, Tommy Gorman. So from early on, that's what I wanted to do in my teenage years, playing matches, reporting on matches. It's one way of ensuring you always played well, is to write the report yourself, you know. The history is written by reporters, not winners or losers. And so then when I finished my Leaving Cert, I was going to go into journalism. I got enough points to go to the only journalism course in Ireland at the time, which was the College of Commerce Rathmines one, which was, you know, one of the sort of the iconic course in Ireland in terms of who has produced over the years. From there, I joined the Western People, spent 9 years there, a South Mayo correspondent, joined the Irish Independent in 1995 as Gaelic Games correspondent for 5 years, five great years. And then by year three or so, I realised I was getting a little bit itchy, some sort of itchy feet, and that journalism, sports journalism in particular, kind of produces the same stories year after year with minor variations. But the winners tend to say what the winners always say, and the losers tend to say what the losers always tend to say. I was lucky to live, to be in the Independent through a time of some incredible victories. You know, Clare Hurlers, Wexford Hurlers for the first time since 1968, the rebirth of Mayo, then Galway. So it was a time of change. It was a time of restructuring of championships that was beginning to happen. I remember we'd a great West of Ireland man, Joe McDonagh, became president. We had been good friends for quite a while. And Croke Park was being redeveloped. So it was an action-packed 5 years. But part of me also likes to participate rather than to spectate. And journalism can be a form of spectating. So I drifted away from it, and I took on a job as chief executive of Lake District Enterprise Limited in Ballinrobe. And that was lasted for a year and a half. We had a bit of trouble financially, which predated me, and I didn't solve it. and then probably for about 20 years, being a self-employed man, freelancing, running my own business, Lee Newell Careers, the training business, went back into a couple of journalism jobs, did some freelancing, which was my favourite time in journalism, freelancing in the Midlands, based in Athlone in the mid-noughties. To me, there's a purity about getting up in the morning as a journalist with no guarantee of money by evening time, that a journalist should be able to find a yarn in that time. And at the time when I was in the Midlands, RT had Kieran Mullooly and the Independent had Tom Fell, but nobody else had a correspondent in the Midlands. So I had the field to myself in some ways. And I loved that. I loved news reporting anyway, probably more than sports reporting, covering all sorts of events in that region. And then, as I said, I have a business that I own about the last 11 or 12 years called Slinua Careers. It's a career training business. And I now work for the Western Development Commission on the Connected Hubs project. But all through that time, I would always be writing. And it probably took me a little bit long while to get to that point. I would always be writing. I would have done some stuff for RTE, a series called Championship Man, which was humour essays on a Thursday evening on the Drive Time show with Mary Wilson and those. But so in the last couple of years, then I found myself drawn to short story writing. I think it probably suits the training or conditioning of a journalist who's used to writing a few thousand words tops. And I found that to be a discipline I really enjoyed. I love the challenge of Can you say, can you go somewhere in 2,000 words and bring the reader with you? And then can you make that 1,800 words or 1,700 words or 1,500 words, you know? The discipline I most admire is songwriting. I think songwriting, there may be only, when you take in choruses, maybe a couple hundred words in a song, and the images it can convey, the emotion it can bring to life, I think it's an incredible discipline. Those who know me will be glad I'm not getting into singing, I can tell you, because that it's of the driving rats out of a stack variety. So the last few years I'm writing a lot of short stories. I have as many more in various stages of disrepair, ready to be either ditched or knocked into shape. And it's a discipline I like, I really like. I think it's, as I said, there's a challenge of brevity, but yet not so brief you take the life out of it. You know, poetry is also a more exacting challenge to get, and I wouldn't have that, I don't have that sensibility for poetry. I'm going to read some of the story, Making the Leap. Charlie pulled the car in on the left just before the empty pier. He held down the button to turn off his phone, which was feeding Spotify through the speaker system, and slipped it down into the pocket on the side of the driver's door. For once, not chock-a-block with scribbled notes, loose batteries, old keys, match programs, and a dozen other random items. "Make sure you clean the car," had been Sophie's last words the evening before. "And get it washed as well." He lifted his wallet off the passenger seat and put it into the glove compartment and unnecessarily checked one more time that the little black ring box was there too. Then he hopped out and grabbed his sports bag from the boot. The morning was grey and the water lapped onto the end of the pier. "Why do I do this?" he asked himself again, just as he had a few times on the ever-narrowing road out from town. Now as he fumbled with his jocks under his dry robe and looked out on the choppy lake, he contemplated not bothering. But he was having a good run of it lately, and though Sophie had wanted to get on the road earlier, he told her he'd like to grab a swim before they left, and so it would be 9:30 a.m. before he'd be at her house. It was late September. The cold sting hit his feet and lower legs when he stepped slowly in at the corner of the pier. No muscular dives and sudden immersions for him. It stayed while he stood stock still, trying to work up the courage. And then, almost catching himself by surprise, he pulled the goggles down onto his eyes and went for it. Hands stretched out in front of him to gain the full value of his initial thrust, feeling the cold on his head and his chest, and then starting to work his arms frantically. Head still underwater, breath held, until he guided himself to a rock where he stood for a few seconds, shivering and gasping, but initiated. He'd broken the back of it now. He settled into a more consistent rhythm as he swam out to the point. He wasn't warm, but he wasn't cold either. It was bearable. "Any day you swim," he thought, "is a good day." And he resolved, as he'd so often done before, to stick with it throughout the winter this time. At the point he took a break, I was surprised to see a person coming his way from the pier, moving at a brisk pace, every stroke smooth, clearly an accomplished swimmer. As the person got nearer, the purple swimsuit bobbing out of the water announced her gender. She drew up alongside Charlie, poked her head underwater to find a rock and stood up straight on it, shoulders, neck and head all above water. "Good morning, I take it you're a regular here," she said, in a voice that wasn't local, each word formed perfectly, earning its keep. "It's my first time, bloody lovely spot." "Well, I've been coming here since I was a young boy," replied Charlie, "but I'm not hardcore. This is as late in the year as it's ever got for me. How about you? You an all-year-rounder?" "Oh, there's no fool like an old fool, I guess," she replied, confirming an English accent. "It's the sea for me, near where I live. But I must say this is a beautiful place, a proper hidden gem. I've driven that road up there thousands of times over the years. I live near Ballina, and I never thought it was such a lovely place just a few miles off it." She wasn't young, perhaps 70 or even a little over it. She had a firmness in her eyes, and she exhibited no discomfort in the water. Her skin was drawn tight across her face. Hardy, Charlie thought. "What's the story with that boy over there?" she asked, pointing at the ball of orange a few hundred yards away. "Please tell me, that's some sort of fabled local challenge." "Well," said Charlie, "it's a relatively new thing. The water sports club put it down there. It's all the go now. 500 yards to it from the pier, so I reckon about 200 from where we are now." "You up for it?" she asked. "Ooh," said Charlie, "it's a bit outside my comfort zone. It's not the distance, but just out there, maybe 50 yards on from here, there is the ledge. And that's definitely fabled. It gets suddenly deep at that point. And not just deep. I don't mind deep too much, but dark too. It's the dark that spooks me." "The darkest hour comes before the dawn," said the woman. "Shall we leap over the abyss?" Charlie couldn't see a way out. And anyway, if he was going to try the boy, best not to do it alone. He had gone past the ledge a few times, but had always wheeled around almost immediately, his mind defeating him. "Shall I declare the gauntlet thrown down?" asked the woman. "If it gets to you, just turn around and we'll come back. Don't be a martyr." And so they set off. There was just him, the water, the woman, and the looming ledge. She moved a length or two ahead and stayed at that remove, adopting his pace. When they crossed the ledge, he felt his breath quicken. His movements became mechanical and awkward. The darkness sent up lake monsters with long curling tails and hollowed out human skulls, white and ghostly. And it took him all his time to not turn back. He saw a headline: "Heartbreak as teacher drowns just hours before wedding proposal." The ring in the glove compartment revealing the imminence of his plans. He imagined Sophie getting a call. He'd turn back now before anything happened. Then, mid-panic, Charlie saw that the woman had stopped. She was at the boy, holding onto the rope that led down, God knows how far, to the concrete block that held the boy in place. "Nearly there," she said. "It's no bother to you." He thrashed wildly, no rhyme or reason to his breathing. He was coming up for air in every second stroke now, and each time the boy came a little closer to him, until eventually he clung onto the rope and gasped for breath. She eased herself away from the rope and was treading water, giving him all the time he needed. 1, 2, 3. you've asked me where I fit in the canon of the Horans, if that's not the, that to mix my metaphors. James Horan, who managed Mayo, revitalised Mayo football in the last 10 years, is my second cousin. His father's name is Liam, and Liam Horan and my father Billy were first cousins. In terms of the other James Horan, the man whose statue appears not too far from where you live, Monsignor Horan, from the same part of the world, we're Partrie, and but related only through marriage, believe it or not. But is my grandfather Joe Horan, who was a principal of the school in Partrie, is mentioned in Monsignor Horan's biography as a teacher, an early teacher of his. But the relationship is through marriage, and so that's where we are with the Horans. My brother Maurice Horan was Limerick manager in his time, was Limerick coach last year, and is now coaching Kerry under 20s. He lives in Tralee, so alongside no less of luminaries than Tomás O'Shea, Brian Sheehan, and Seamus Moynihan, he's tucked in there as the coach, showing the Kerry crowd how football is played in Mayo and how they can benefit from his wise counsel.
Liam Horan there giving me taking a break from talking about his beautiful book of short stories, which is entitled Second Chance, and adding in some lovely sentences about sport, his own involvement, his father and he was involved, and of course James Horan, his cousin as well, and other cousins. Homalishin, and if you wish to text us, the number 087 900 41 41, that's 087 900 41 41. And James was very reluctant to be over promoting himself or anything of the kind, but a most interesting man. And I asked him a little bit about about any advice that he might have for aspiring writers. And again, he was a bit reluctant to mention aspiring writers and explain what he might do, but he gave what I felt was a very fine, a tight, helpful answer.
And again on Saturday afternoon,
the best laid plans of mice and men were the journey shed gang aft a glee, and indeed they do. The gang after Glee. Rahmid Dashish, good James Horan on Bautisha, or not James Gumleshkill or Liam Horan. We'll read out a few of the texts while we're getting organised here. First of all, Joel, really lovely to hear Liam Horan on the programme. Didn't realise that he had broken into the literary field. He has been a very prominent man on the sideline and in various positions on the playing field, but it's great that he has moved into the literary field. Another listener says, Joe, I heard Liam Horan reading from his book. It was absolutely delightful down at the launch in Castlebar. And where can you find his book is another question here. Well, Liam answered that question for me, and I'll broadcast that in a few minutes as well. In the meantime, we'll hear him talking about the little bit of advice that he might give to writers. Home Irish, and another lovely message in it says, Joe, great that Mayo are producing so many fine musicians and creative people in various ways, artists and musicians and composers of tunes and writers as well. Another listener says, Joe, wonderful you're featuring South Mayo tonight with Marty Fahey and that glorious project over in Chicago, and now Liam Horan with his short stories. Wish Liam the very, very best. We all wish Liam the very, very best from Ballinrobe. And Canelli in Shire, an interesting one, says, Joe, you have featured a man called Mick Donlan from up the Ballinrobe country several times in the programme. Great that you're adding to the list Liam Horan. I'm looking forward very much to reading his book. What's it called again? It's called Second Chance, Lister. And another delightful one referring to a writer from South Mayo. Joe, it's a while since you broadcast Colette Nickey, that brilliant writer in the Irish language from South Mayo. But marvellous that Liam Horan is joining those canon of writers and mentioning the Irish language. Another lovely text, Mrs. Joe, I wonder is Liam Horan related to Mihalo Horoin, the man that wrote that lovely book, Schlefjuio. I think he was not from Ballinrobe, but from Tourmacady, not that far away. Well, I did ask Liam if he was a cousin of James's. James the Horan, the great of the airport, and James of the football, and of Mihalo Horan, as it happens, but he said that he wasn't. But Rahmid Dash, good Liam Horan on the Wisha.
So you've asked about what advice I would give other writers, and I would be loath, first of all, to give other writers advice. One thing I say, I'm almost speaking to myself as well as much as anybody else, but a few things I would say is write, that goes without saying. In my view, write fast, edit slow. Surround yourself with 1, 2, 3, 5, if you can get them, people who know what you're trying to do, who have a general idea of what you're trying to do, and will give you feedback in a way that doesn't lay you out, okay? What you write will not be loved by everybody, so you need to pick people who you'd like to like your book, if you know what I mean, or your writing, and work with them then. So in my case, two key people were Jimmy Lyons and John Colhan, two very, very good friends of mine. And they were well able to give feedback saying, no, you're going off the wrong road there, that's not right, but had a general belief or faith in what I was trying to do. I think that's really important. Too often we allow our dreams to be trampled on sort of by people who just don't understand what you're trying to do. So it's yes, get feedback, but have a core idea where you're trying to go. And for example, one of my great heroes is Leo Morin of the Saw Doctors. For many reasons, the arrival of the Saw Doctors coincided with the end of my teens, and it was an awakening what they were writing about. All of a sudden, it's okay to have your heart broken, not by a woman, but by a fellow who didn't give you the last pass when you needed it and you're through on goal. So what I like about Leo Morin most of all is that he knows what he wants to do, and he's done it continuously for 30 years or more at this stage. So you have to have a general idea of what interests you. Get good people around you to give feedback and go at it. Take the feedback and ultimately you make the final decisions. But that, I think that's really important. There's a story in the book called Splintering, which is about a man who suffered at the hands of a sneering teacher in his school days, who sneered at his efforts to read or write English. And now here he is, many years later, at a writing group or a reading group where he's got his son's work in his inside pocket. He's going to read this son's work if it all works out. And his son has died at a very young age. So now he's facing a double challenge, or maybe many more challenges, to stand up, to read in front of people, but also to read his son's work. He hasn't even told his wife he's there. He has told her a lie for this, a convenient lie for this evening. A well-intentioned lie, and so this is where he's at. But I was making the point where some people, some things ring a bell and other things don't. So a couple of readers really picked up on the flashback to him in primary school getting sneered at by a teacher, and that wasn't fortunately my experience in primary school. But for those for whom it was, this is a much more powerful passage that I've written than I realised I had written, and that's great. There are other points where people, one reader picked up on a phrase I used in the graveyard, the priest put away his accoutrements. I thought little of it, but for somebody that had a real symbolic value, that marks the end of the funeral. That's the final moment, kind of, when the priest, it's like the referee putting the ball back in the boot to a certain extent, you know, that's the end of that. So,
Lee, there we go. Lovely qualities there, and lovely reaction to the story. And another one here, listener says, Joe, I really enjoyed that story there, the leap from Liam Horne, and looking forward to the book. And where is it available? Well, listener, here is Liam Horne to tell us where it's available.
Yes, you can get rare unsigned copies of Second Chance and Other Stories in bookshops around Mayo, for example, Smith's in Claremorris, Castle Bookstores, two outlets in Castlebar, Martin Murphy's in Ballinrobe, Duffy's in Westport, and various other places as well. And you can also buy it online if you go to mayobooks.ie. It's available online there as well. And I'd like to thank David Brennan, the publisher, for his work in publishing this book. He published three books in conjunction with the Wild Atlantic Words Literary Festival. And aren't we blessed in Mayo to have a publisher like that who is investing, you know, expertise and time and all of that, not just taking a punt, so to speak, in books produced in Mayo. And, you know, long may that last. And, I'm delighted to have been given the opportunity. And I hope people enjoy the book. And whether they do or not, there will be more as well. So that's both a promise and a threat, depending on where you sit.
1, 2, 3.
gentle music there into the night. The Lord of St. Johnston there, played brilliantly by two wonderful musicians from Holly Mountain, South Mayo, not far from where Liam Horan is from. And that was Chloe Feeney on the concertina and Shane McGrath on the guitar. And we heard lovely pieces from them in and out in between. Chloe played the melodeon there as well, with a lovely version of the Home Ruler hornpipe. And we heard Shane playing a gorgeous version of She Bug She More on the guitar, Home Alishin. And there were one or two other little pieces in between there as well. The beautiful piece that we heard at the beginning there was the Hector the Hero, a gorgeous tune from Scotland. So that's the scale. My thanks to Liam Horan, who called to the house and did that lovely recording. And how it was a pleasure being in his company. And of course, he's a man of many, many stories, being a reporter and being a man involved in football. And the story, as he says himself, going on, we have to be talking in Mayo about football, even if we're only talking about it to ourselves. Got to meet him in a while, Liam. The name of the book again, Lester, yes, the name of the book is Second Chance. Joe, you might play a piece of music on the guitar. By any chance, who was that guitarist that was playing first? He was brilliant. Well, that was Shane McGrath, brilliant guitarist there from South Mayo. But the one you want to hear is Steve Cooney. And Lester says, Joe, we had a great launch of John Twin McNamara's double CD down in Achill at the weekend. It was absolutely brilliant. 18 songs from Achill on a double CD recorded by a man when he was at the age of 84 and 86. It was a great night, and well done to the Cooneys who puts beautiful shape on it in the studio. Play something from Steve Cooney for everyone involved, and particularly for John Twin McNamara and Mary. Well, here you go, listener. Beautiful music of O'Carolan Eleanor Plunkett and then with her Guillaume Olinchin, lady who had a tragic life, Eleanor Plunkett from Meath and County Westmeath. And that's from his lovely CD entitled Ceol Chláirsí.